indeed another kind of way of resisting the biometric drive of the contemporary settler state, right? There's all these like kind of movements towards, more gender options, which I think are fine, and, different forms of biometric technology that are not predicated on gender. But I actually don't think that any of those are going to necessarily get us any closer to freedom in a kind of generalizable way. I understand, yes, they're things that people need to stay alive right now, and I always will support that, especially for people that are in hyper institutionalized situations. So I always will, again, support that. But that being said, I don't think that that can be the end of, as Termeling puts it, our freedom journey.
Emergency, emergency. We obey no one. We're gonna exterminate you now. We will get our power. We obey no one. We are a superior being.
Daleks, listen to CKUT 90.3 FM in Montreal.
We've been talking about it for over a year, and you probably already know anyway, we've decided not to say it this time. So we're not going to tell you again that to protect yourself from COVID-19, you should wash your... And we certainly won't repeat once more that you should wear a... Or most importantly, that we must keep our... from others. Because you already know this is the best way to fight the virus. Even when you're vaccinated, let's continue to protect ourselves. A message from the Gouvernement du Québec.
You need quality sounds? Tune into CKUT 90.3 on the frequency modulation band radio. www.ckut.ca on the internet. Streaming audio, archive shows, and information.
Welcome to Dragon Root Radio, feminist waves brought to you by CKUT and the Center for Gender Advocacy.
The Dragon Root Media Collective aims to bring you feminist content that challenges interlocking systems of oppression and makes space for voices systemically silenced. Dragon Root understands media as being inherently political and emphasizes media skill sharing as a form of resistance.
We meet every other Wednesday at 6 p.m. at the Center for Gender Advocacy and welcome anyone interested in learning or producing feminist media to join. No skills required.
Welcome to Dragon Root Radio. On today's show, we had the chance to speak with the founder of Hizontic. Hizontic is a safe space for queer and BIPOC individuals to express themselves through experimental fashion, performance, and community. Here to chat more about it is founder Dina.
Hi, my name is Dina. I'm the founder and creative director of Hizontic. I'm also a multidisciplinary artist, and my work centers around cultural and societal intersectionalities. And my passion lies within the realm of visual arts with underlying social commentary. So I really focus on making safe communal spaces for marginalized identities and really encourage taking up that space.
Awesome. So can you tell us, as you mentioned, you're a founder. So can you tell us a little bit about how this project began? Maybe before
of course,
in its current form.
Yeah, also, I just want to say, like, Hizontic, for me, I pronounce it Hizontic. I guess I'll just start with the name. Let's start with that. So when I was brainstorming for the store's name, I stumbled upon Hizontic, and I knew that it was the one instantly, but then I was hesitant because of the letter Kha. It just made, the word itself means your closet in Arabic. And my first thought was, how would non-Arabic speaking individuals pronounce it? And then I recognized that in that thought, I was compromising on my identity and culture, and I decided that it didn't matter. Everything in the past, everything I did was about being neutral and about just like, just compromising on my identity to make everyone else comfortable. But everyone else, as in basically like non-Arabs, I always felt like Arabs were so loud and took up so much space. So I just like since moving to Canada, I've been like making myself smaller and smaller and smaller. So yeah, I just decided that it didn't matter. And that's the whole point. So even with the word Khizantik, I'm celebrating that letter Kha. And it just means that for those who are not familiar with this letter, they can just say however sounds right or however sounds natural. And there's really no wrong to say it, no wrong way to say it. But for me, it's Khizantik. Khizantik is a space for queer and BIPOC individuals to express themselves through experimental fashion, performance, and community. Khizantik is an ethical and inclusive fashion, culture, and identity-centered platform and store. And this will manifest in selling slow fashion or secondhand items. It will also manifest in events and pop-ups that center local artists and other BIPOC creatives in Montreal, and just overall represent and celebrate queer and BIPOC expression and individuality.
Awesome. I love that you mentioned that about the name. That's such a, like, that's great that you didn't compromise. So can you tell us a bit about how, so as you mentioned, it's a safe space for queer and BIPOC individuals. Can you tell us more about what this means for the initiative and why it was important to center?
Yeah, of course. So bi and four spaces are so important because they highlight and validate the lived experience of marginalized communities. And these spaces are also anti-colonial in their essence. It's just so important to highlight this and to provide spaces that are dedicated to the representation, celebration, and safety of queer BIPOC individuals. So connecting with fellow BIPOCs and just building a community where there's a common understanding and you don't even have to explain yourself or make your identity small and, like, again, compromise on who you are just because you're surrounded with folks who relate to your experience. And that's just been really life-saving for me. Community and spaces that are specifically dedicated to queer BIPOCs have healing powers. And it just overall encourages taking up space and making that space for yourself that otherwise you wouldn't have been offered because of oppressive socio-political realities. So Khizantik really just says that you don't have to choose between appropriating or surrendering your non-white identity. And it just says that you can, I guess, redefine your identity in a way that serves yourself to celebrate rituals and traditions. And yeah.
So you mentioned it, there's a focus on kind of slow fashion, fashion events. What's your, an experimental fashion? So what's your personal connection with experimental fashion and performance? And how did your experience inform this project?
Okay. So this might get a little bit deep. But so having a degree in women's studies and business studies is really what paved the way for this project to come to life. Business studies, I would say, taught me technical skills, traditional modes of business, and entrepreneurship, whereas women's studies sharpened my skills in critical thought and just equipped me with an intersectional understanding of the world. Experimental fashion for me has to do with how you approach a traditional concept of a clothing store and how you adapt it to your needs. So that being like your identity needs, your financial needs. For me, it's just first and foremost an accessible way to be an entrepreneur. So Khizantik is a raw project. It's a transparent space, but mostly a space that challenges colonial and patriarchal and capitalist notions. This means that it doesn't really matter what the structure is. It's flowy, it's a play it by ear type of project. And what I mean by that is that the idea of following a strict business plan and a strict structure when it comes to stores is very capitalist. So Khizantik shies away from that. It also alleviates some of the societal pressures of conforming to all these rules and business models and colonial ways of living. And it just encourages alternative ways of productivity and a more accessible way of entrepreneurship. It's experimental in every sense of the word. So it really centers creative processes that don't put too much pressure on structure, but more importantly, it's exciting and forgiving, fun and ever-changing. Also, I choose to use the word performance because I find that it highlights how in today's online world, everything is a performance. So it's a good and bad thing in a way. I feel like it takes away some of the pressure of presenting yourself and being vulnerable. It sort of just like represents a shield. We're constantly performing for others, but it doesn't have to be a bad thing. In this context, it just means that you can choose to present yourself exactly as you wish to be perceived. And there's so much power in that. And it allows space for drama, theatricals, and just like anything outside of a norm. And this was important for me to also center because of how rigid the Arab community can be and the lack of representation of Arabs in these spaces. So Arab community is very heavy on reputation and honoring reputation. So just having this kind of representation out there and like being in public and just as that you can let loose. It doesn't matter what anyone thinks, it's all just performance anyways. But yeah, it says you can be any version of yourself that you want to be and feel comfortable presenting that and being perceived as such without the pressure of defining it. It just says like it's not that deep. And just entrepreneurship in general for me, it took me such a long time to like start any business endeavors just because it just feels very intimidating and just it's not accessible to everyone, but it also doesn't have to be that bounded and that just that deep. It's just it just also encourages others to just do it. Like just do it, go with the flow. Don't set too many expectations for yourself because whatever comes out of it will come out. And it's just a matter of being consistent and believing in yourself.
A little earlier, you mentioned the importance of community in building this. So can you tell us a little bit about what the reception has been so far or the impact that it's had or that you hope for it to have?
Yeah. Before Khizantik was Khizantik, it was DDC. Which was just an online thrift store. But the reason why I'm bringing this up is because without DDC, Khizantik would have never come to light because DDC really taught me the meaning of community and how supportive and necessary community is. DDC was a super DIY in my closet, winging it type of situation. But it paid the bills, and it paid the bills because of the community who believed in me, trusted me, and just supported me. So far with Khizantik, I only just rebranded it and launched it, and I'm just really excited for what's to come. Like, it's just everything is falling into place, and it just makes so much sense. It's been received with so much love, support, and enthusiasm. And although the DDC community was very small and humble, every single item I would put out would sell within seconds. And again, all of this just happened because of the community. Like, it was a following of around 500 people, but every single person there really contributed to it. And even with the pop-ups and the collaborations, like, it just turned into a communal hub of trading and selling and buying clothes. So it's what had made DDC, but also community is what is what I'm trying to say is that community is what makes Khizantik what it's going to be. And yeah, I'm really thankful for that. And also the way DDC had started was people coming up to me and asking me if I could sell on their behalf or if they could use my platform. So it was just like word of mouth and connections and connecting with people and everyone just like selling together and showing up for each other. So yeah, community has definitely been life-changing for me.
I love to hear it. That's so great. You mentioned also earlier fashion, but also events coming up. So what are your hopes for the future? What kind of events do you plan on holding? All those things.
Yeah, I'm really trying to, I just want to connect with other creatives in Montreal and highlight other artists, queer and BIPOC individuals. And for events, it would really just be like BIPOC markets and DJs and artists and just like coming together and highlighting each other. I'm working towards expanding the Chizantic team and towards having a self-sustaining clothing store that just gives back to the community. I'm also hoping to launch a magazine in 2022 that highlights Arab, queer, and BIPOC art. So merging the two would also be in the books. I'm just super excited for the future of Chizantic, and I'm really looking forward to collaborating with other fellow queer BIPOC creatives. And also cannot wait to launch the website. That's coming soon.
Oh, that's exciting.
Yeah.
Cool. So speaking of the website to be launched, but where in the meantime, where can people learn more or find you online?
So for now, Chizantic is operating on Instagram, which is its main platform. So it's at Chizantic, spelled K-H-E-Z-A-N-T-I-K. You can also keep an eye out on the brand on what's coming next there, but the website will be launching soon. We also just launched the Chizantic TikTok for some fun video content. So it's the same handle as K-H-E-Z-A-N-T-I-K. Otherwise, you can find me and follow up on my work on Instagram at Dina Shihabi. So D-I-N-A-S-H-I-H-A-B-I. And for other content that's relevant on TikTok, at the Dina Shihabi. So T-H-E-D-I-N-A-S-H-I-H-A-B-I.
Thank you so much for coming on the show.
That was our interview with Dina, the founder of Chizantic, a safe space for queer BIPOC individuals to express themselves through experimental fashion, performance, and community. Up next, we have our interview with Wynn Wolf, who recently debuted their song, Boys on Magazines, as well as their video. Here to talk more about the making of, as well as the meaning behind it, is Wynn.
You're so I'm an independent artist from Montreal, and I just put out my first single, and it's going really well. I'm really happy with it.
Girls, they call you trouble. Friends will call you God.
Speaking of your first single, so this is your kind of music debut with Boys on Magazines. Can you tell me a bit or us a little bit about the song itself?
So this is a song that is really for the person I was when I wrote it, which was in like my last year of high school. And it was a time where I think I felt really conflicted because I was, you know, like, and I still am like a diehard feminist and really trying to prioritize female friendships and the environment and just things I cared about. But at the same time, I felt like my brain was just filled with anxiety and insecurities about male approval. Mm-hmm. And it was really tough because it's something that I think, especially now, we're not really talking about in music anymore, is feeling really powerless. At least in my circles with like teenage girls or young girls, now I'm 20, and girls who, you know, the image that is really popular to portray is one of a really powerful person. And of course I want to present as powerful, but I wanted to also talk about something that is just feeling really shitty. Can I say that?
Yeah.
Feeling really shitty about, or being made to feel really shitty by, like, boys. So that's what the song's about. And that's why I chose it as the first single, because it's kind of how I wanted to start whatever journey this is. Because now I do feel like, although it's a up and down thing with self-confidence, I do feel like that's very much in the past. But I definitely wanted to put this out because I feel like at that age, I would have loved this song.
Yeah. Yeah, totally. That's such a theme, especially for young women. The male approval thing that definitely doesn't get talked about. That's so interesting. I didn't know that was the kind of background. That's cool. Great. So that's a little bit about the theme of the song. I was reading up on your website, some of your collaborators or the people you worked with. Can you tell us a bit about the process of creating it?
Yeah. So, I mean, the recording process happened during COVID. So, or it's still COVID, but during the lockdown portion. So it was all very intense and very secluded and very one-on-one. And I was working really closely with the producers. But it was my first time in like recording in a recording studio. So it was super interesting. And actually all of this has been my first time. It's been like my first time in a recording studio, my first time on the radio, and my first time, you know, making a video and all these things. So I was really trying to enjoy it at the same time, knowing we have to do it now, because I was recording like 3 hours away and getting COVID tests and all this. So it was like, okay, we need to really get it right. And so that was kind of, I knew I couldn't just, you know, drive down the street and re-record everything. So it was pretty intense for me, at least, you know, making sure everything sounded good and making sure everything else could be done remotely. But that was kind of the recording process. And although I love the recording process, it's like it's not my favorite thing, because my favorite thing is writing. And so it was more of a, although I enjoyed it a lot, it was more of a like, okay, what's next? Like, now it's done. Can we get it out? Can we, like, that was more where my brain was at.
Right. Yeah. Especially in a COVID time, I'm sure it's just like, let's get it done. Awesome. I want to talk about the video, but before we get more into kind of the creation sides of things, I was reading that a little bit about kind of your journey as an artist, and I read somewhere, I think it was also on the site, that you weren't allowed to listen to pop music when you were younger. Is that true? Can you tell us a little bit about that and how you go from listening mainly to kind of blues and rock to being a Swiftie?
Well, it is true. Yes, I was waiting for you to bring up Taylor Swift. It is really true. My dad did not let us listen to Virgin Radio. Like, he would just, I always wanted to listen to Virgin Radio. And he was always like, no, Virgin, like, it was a fight. So we didn't. We listened to, he was a musician. So his friend's CDs and his CDs and like the Rolling Stones and, you know, a lot of blues and Elvis and things like that. And I loved that. There's like videos of me just like watching Elvis, like staring at the computer, because I just love him. But like, I was really lucky to grow up with the internet. So I was like obsessed with Taylor Swift, and not really like not surrounded by people who were obsessed with her, but I was so obsessed with her. And I was so obsessed with country music and because of her. And I just like female, like I was obsessed with Carrie Underwood. I was obsessed with like Miranda Lambert. Like, she really opened that door for me. And it was just like all these songs about like killing your husband. And I just loved it. Like, I really loved it all. So some of my first songs were about like leaving an abusive husband, even though I was like 10 in the bath, because I was just like, that's what I knew. But yeah, that is really true. And I really, but I just loved pop music, and I just loved like ear candy, and I just loved what was on the radio. And I think I felt kind of embarrassed about that for a bit, because especially early teen years, everybody wants to know like the cool underground, whatever.
Yeah.
And I was never the friend with the aux, because I was always like, I only want to listen to like really basic things. But like, I have a playlist called Basic for a Reason. Like, I truly believe a lot of things are just basic because they're good. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of the music I want to make, is just like things that a lot of people can listen to. But like, even I think I've succeeded with this song, because I've had my grandmother from like kids I used to babysit be like, I love it. And that's really my favorite thing, is just being it, like people can put it on and like it. At the same time, it has a meaning if you listen to the lyrics. Yeah. So I've succeeded in that, which I'm really proud of.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, it makes me think Taylor Swift and even the genre of country is really good at storytelling and lyrics and that kind of like immediate imagery. And I think you've definitely, you know, achieved that in this debut song. So let's talk a little bit about the video, because there's also so much imagery in that. Can you tell us a bit about the inspiration for it, or the concept?
So the video is really my baby. Like, I conceptualized it and I saw it through start to finish. And so that's probably like, I'm just as proud of it as the song, because I loved making it. It was my first time doing anything like that, but I was like, I just loved it. And I'm happy I like that, because it's not really music. It's just more like another form of art, but it was really fun. So basically, I think when you hear the song, your initial instinct for a video is it's in a high school, because that's kind of where it takes place. But I wanted to kind of subvert that theme and do a bunch of high school scenes, typical scenes, so lockers and cafeteria and like prom and school photos, and just kind of see if we could make those work in a daycare to poke fun at the immaturity of the subject of the song. And so that's why there's the scene of me like singing to a camera in a crib for that POV. And that was probably my favorite scene. But that was the concept for the video. And then I got involved with Jared Levy, who directed it. And he was working with an awesome producer, Joshua Rosenbaum. And they came in and really like were able to help. They had the cameras and they had the vision too. And so it was really nice working with them. And I just asked all my friends to be in it. I was like, you're who was there, let's do this. And then I studied theater in Sejep. So I had a friend from theater join me, Josh Hughes. And he played the dude. And it just really came together really nicely. I felt really lucky, because I just happened to know all these talented people who could help me. So that was really fun.
That's awesome. And so, yeah, I was wondering, because, you know, sometimes it's an interesting comment that you made, where, you know, music is one kind of medium and then a video is a different thing. And I think you can tell, you know, you have a theater background, because sometimes it doesn't always translate with, you know, musicians onto the screen. And that's really cool to see, and that you got to work with your friends. So this video and song recently launched. What has the reception been so far? Are you happy with how everything has turned out? What's the feedback you're getting?
I'm really happy. I mean, it's for a first thing, like, to already be, being picked up by the radio is really cool. Like, I'm so proud of that, because obviously as I was saying, like, being on pop radio or whatever is not something that... Or sorry, let me say that again. Being on pop radio is something that is really a dream of mine. So that's kind of my goal, is to be on Virgin Radio. But it's been really fun. And my favorite thing has been being like reached out to by actually young girls who go to my high school, who were like much younger than me when I left, and them being like, I love this song. And I'm just like, I made it for you. Thank you. Like, that's my, like, I can't believe they could be having their headphones in and like walking down the hallway and listening to my song, because that's really where I wrote it. Like, my high school was not the best for feeling empowered as a girl. You know, we had, I mean, we had to wear skirts and we had to, and like, you know, we were a really, it was also just, I'm trying to think how to explain it. It was really focused on academics. And I think that's an inherently kind of male dominated field. So when you're spending all your time talking about that and wearing your skirt and all the guys are in pants, it just kind of makes you feel bad, like even if you don't realize it. And so I'm just so happy that they get to hear those songs because like, that's where I wrote them. The cover is like the girl who did the cover. Her name's Jen Lynn. She's awesome. She went to my high school too. And we were like, this is the third floor. No, this is the, sorry. We were like, this is the second floor West Wing. That's what it is. And so that was really fun because now that people there are listening to it, I'm like, yeah, it's literally for you. I made it for you. I'm so happy you love it. So that's been like my favorite thing.
Oh, that's wonderful. That's so meaningful too. And it has that more personal connection. So I guess we'll, I'm sorry. I want to make sure my internet, there we go. So those were all my kind of main questions. I guess I want to know. So this is the first song that's out. You'll have your time to, you know, enjoy this of course, but also what's next and what do you hope, to continue building and creating?
Well, right now I'm really trying to kind of get my foot in the door in being taken seriously. Like I am a young woman. And so even though I'm like kind of running, I'm an independent artist, right? So I'm making the decisions and I'm having a lot of fun, but you know, still, when I walk into spaces, I'm usually one of the only girls. Like even the video, it's dudes, even recording, it's dudes. And that's okay. And there's nothing wrong with that. But I do feel like I definitely want to try to start working with more women. Now that I have a bit more of a repertoire and I can kind of be like, these are the stories I want to tell. So for my next thing, I'm working on another single that I really want to put out. We're starting with singles. We're starting with, you know, kind of creating different little universes in these songs. And then my goal eventually is to make an album and work on a live show and do all those things. But so what was I saying? Yes, with this next single, I definitely want to try to work with more women because I think I'm telling a female story and it's important to have those people behind the scenes too. And I'm really excited about that. I'm really excited. Obviously, I'm enjoying this, but literally as soon as the song came out, I was like, okay, next song, we got to go. And that's kind of how my brain works. So I'm really looking forward to doing that and doing hopefully a different video and doing developing, like I said, a live show is going to be really cool. I'm really looking forward to that.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much for speaking with me. I really appreciate you bringing in the kind of gendered experience of being not just a female artist, but a young female artist. So that's a really important perspective to chat about. So really appreciate that. Very important.
Thank you. Being able to incorporate them in this is really important to me because it's where most of my energy goes.
Yeah.
So anyway, it's something that's really important to me and I hope I can keep talking about it because I want young girls to see me talk about it and listen and feel seen and all that.
Yeah, well, I can't wait to see what you do next.
You're listening to Dragon Root Radio on CKUT 90.3 FM in Montreal. You just heard our interview with Wynn Wolf, a Montreal artist who just made her debut with Boys on Magazines. Here is that song.
You're so cool, they call you by your last name. You're so cool.
That was Boys on Magazines by Wynn Wolf, a debut song by this local Montreal artist. Up next, we are talking to another artist for Esme. We chatted with Mar about being a musician in the pandemic and what it's like to be a feminist artist.
I'm Mara Meredith. I'm the front woman and general creative director of For Esme, which has been my musical project for, I've actually lost track of how many years. I guess we must be pushing 7 now, maybe more. And we've put out 3 records, 2 of which I put out with like the group of bandmates that I've been working with for a while now. The most recent one was Righteous Woman in 2018. And yeah, in COVID, I'm like making music, but I don't have anything to put out in the immediate future, but I'm definitely working on new stuff and thinking about new stuff. So I'm excited to talk more about that maybe later.
So I want to go way back. Can you tell me about how you got into music in the first place and how For Esme came together?
Sure. I've always loved music ever since I was a tiny human. My parents were always like, they're not super musical, so they were always confused about why I like wanted to sing and dance and perform all the time. But yeah, I've always loved singing. I think I always had an interest in writing music, but I definitely didn't have confidence that I could do it myself until probably university, I think, is when I started writing music. And I was just writing on acoustic guitar, and I started having a lot of fun doing that. And I quickly realized I was having so much more fun writing music than I was like doing my undergrad degree. So after university, I moved here to Toronto to like really try to take a chance and focus on this. And so after a couple years, I came up with the For Esme idea. I've always been a really big fan of J.D. Salinger's writing, which is where the name came from. I've since realized that J.D. Salinger is like super problematic in a bunch of ways. I think he had a lot of issues with mistreating young women. So I'm kind of reckoning with that right now. But since my project's so feminist, and I always try to think about how, like, I don't know, if Esme is the little girl from that story that's maybe, now that I'm older, looking back, like kind of being preyed upon by an older man, I like to think that at least the music I'm writing about is about giving voice to young women and a voice that I wish I had when I was younger. So I don't know, I'm still kind of struggling with that, but it's something I definitely acknowledge and I'm thinking about, but that's where the name came from. And yeah, we were a trio for a while, then it's kind of been moving parts. I love to change it up, and the bigger my ideas get, the more people are required to make them happen. So right now, well, most recently when we've toured, we've been a 5-piece, and I'm collaborating with a few people from that 5-piece on the work I've been working on this year. But it's all kind of a work in progress, and it can always, I like that it can always change who the cast of people that are going to perform are.
So on the official site, it says that For Esme is, quote, an unabashedly feminist exploration of self-love and the courage of conviction in uncertain times. I don't know if you wrote uncertain times before COVID.
It was, actually. I kind of forgot about that. Yeah, now it's more uncertain than ever.
But can you tell us a bit more about why, or about this feminist exploration and what it means to you in the project?
Sure. I've identified as feminist for a long time. Like, specifically, I remember since when I was doing my undergrad and learning about, even just realizing how underrepresented women were in academia, and how like all the readings I was doing in my politics classes were all by like old white men, and how reading a reading a woman's perspective was often deemed as like a radical thing. And I was like, it shouldn't be radical, it should be normal. But yeah, I think ever since I've been doing music, like, it's always been important for me to write about, I'm really interested in cultural critique and like interrogating the things that I think are wrong with the world. And often, I don't like to be too like prescriptive about what I think other people should be doing to make the world better, but it's often more interrogating myself about what I could be doing or how I could be living to be more overtly feminist, I guess. And we're probably going to get into this later, but I'm actually doing my master's right now at U of T in this program called Community Development and Adult Education. So this semester I'm taking a class on feminist theory, and it's been so much fun for me to be back in that world. And it's like feeding my brain so much in terms of, it's a lot of amazing thinkers that I always have been interested in, but to have to study them kind of academically is exciting for me. But this semester, we're reading a book called Living a Feminist Life by Sarah Emmett. And it's blowing my mind. Like, it's already stuff I've thought about, but she's just giving voice to all these things that I've been writing about and thinking about for a long time. And it's cool to see them in a different form, like a non-musical form, and think about what that means. And I think, I mean, I've talked about this in the record and since, but like, you know, I'm a white, straight, cis lady. And so my feminism is always expanding, and I'm trying to expand it to be a lot more broad and to include a lot more other perspectives and voices. And I'm increasingly thinking a lot about what capitalism and decolonization mean in terms, like, I don't think feminism is going to be super valuable without those pieces now. And I guess I've always known that, but I'm getting more into that now.
So speaking of this, your music obviously follows these themes. I want to play a song for our listeners called For Others. Can you tell us a bit about this song?
Sure. So I wrote For Others around when I was getting married to my husband, Charlie, who's like one of my oldest, dearest friends, and he's fabulous. But I had a lot of weird things about getting married. I wasn't even sure if like that fit with my feminist agenda or not, but I also wanted it. So it was confusing, and I felt like I was kind of struggling with this, what felt like a diverging choice of like, am I going to pursue music, or am I going to pursue like having a family and a husband and a life that is, and I've since realized that of course it's possible to have both, but I don't think our culture like makes it easy to have both. And I was really struggling with the concept of whether or not I want to have kids, which is funny because now a couple years later, like all my friends are having kids this year. And I'm like, oh, you know what? Kids are cool. Like, kids are actually awesome. And it's not as scary to imagine having a life and having kids. But that's where I was at when I was writing that. And I was really struggling between those two things.
So this is the song For Others by For Esme. Just heard the song For Others by Fort Esme. So we've interviewed many musicians over the years to speak about their gendered experience of the music industry, whether that's on tour, writing, performing. I'm curious what your experience is working in music and if you've encountered or observed any similar limitations as a woman in music.
Yes, I sure have. I think it's hard to be a woman in music. I think any woman in this field can probably relate to that. I've run into tons of sexist bullshit over the years and people condescendingly telling me what to do and men assuming I don't know how to use my gear or don't know how to do a sound check or just generally being like mansplained to about all kinds of stuff. But I also recognize, like I really recognize that a lot of women have it harder than I do. I've had access to things that lots of women don't. And I'm always conscious when there's like, I think there's such a push in the industry right now to have better representation when it comes to women. But then you'll be like, oh, it's interesting that all these women were invited, but we're all white, or all these women were invited, but we're all cis and straight. And it's like, I don't know. I think I'm increasingly conscious that even though my experience has been hard, I need to use that. My anger about how hard mine has been to advocate for other people who have it even harder. But yeah, it can be the worst for sure. But I also think I will add, I think it was around 2014, 2015, I started like really getting to know a lot of other women in the industry, especially here in Toronto. And it totally changed my life and it totally changed my career because working with women and like collaborating and sharing the experience and having each other to talk to, like it just made everything so much more fun and so much more fulfilling and exciting. So even though it's hard, I think, I don't know, I would not want to be a woman in the music industry. So yeah, and I think it's changing slowly. I mean, it's interesting to still see, I know last week I noted like more abusers in the Canadian industry are being outed, and I know there's more to come. And that sucks. Like, it's hard to see that men are still not held to the same standard by any stretch as the women in this industry are. But I'm hoping it'll change. I'm hoping it's changing.
Yeah. So you mentioned people being held accountable, as well as having more representation in the music industry. Are there any other things or solutions you think that would help women get into music?
Yeah, I mean, I think having mentors is so important. And I think that's important in every field. And it's something I've been thinking about and reading about in the schoolwork I'm doing lately, too. Like, it's hard in academia if you look up and you don't see any women professors in your field, or if you don't see any women of color in your field, if you don't see any trans people in your field, and you're like, well, can I fit into that space? So I know for me, when I meet and can look up to women who are like incredible audio engineers or incredible producers, like when I started music, I didn't know a single woman who produced their own music. I mean, I knew Grimes did it, but like, even then everyone was like, does she really write her own music? And now it's like, of course, like so many women do these things and they do them so well. And I've had amazing experiences. Like my favorite two audio, like my two favorite sound techs that we ever tour with are both women, and they're like honestly better than any of the men I've ever toured with. But I think it's cool because now when other women come to those shows and they see those women killing it doing those jobs, it gives you like a belief that you could see yourself in that role too. And I think that's cool and I think it's important. And I think even just like, I remember being really nervous when I was younger to speak up about the things that I thought were unfair. And then since I now have a lot less problem doing that. But I think it's important to see other people do it. Because when you see other people be like, this is unjust or this isn't fair or this shouldn't be that way, then you feel braver to be like, yeah, I also have experienced that. And I don't think it's right either. And, you know, power in numbers.
I'd like to turn to another song. So this song is called Small Talk. Now, the video for Small Talk is one of my favorites. Can you tell us a bit about the idea and the concept behind it?
Absolutely. So this is like, I mean, I made quite a few music videos over the years, but this is my favorite one for a bunch of reasons. One is that I got to collaborate with Amy and Nora of Quote Unquote Collective, who are like this incredible feminist theater duo. And if you don't know them, you should check them out. They've made this amazing play and movie called Mouthpiece and another play called Now You See Her. And they're both just like, I don't know, they're the coolest. I love working with them. And they directed this movie or this music video. And we had so much fun like interrogating what it's like to repress your feelings in public and try to be okay when you're not, or try to be, I don't know, I feel like so often I'm like feeling like I need to put on a happy face or like be sunny when I don't feel sunny or smile when I don't feel like it. And so it was fun to explore through movement what it feels like when you're kind of erupting and you're trying not to. I also used to dance a lot when I was younger and I really love dance. And so being able to incorporate that into my music in a new way is super exciting. So it was so fun to make. And as you see, if you watch the video, like some of it was super intimidating. Like I had to do my little eruption dance on the GO train. And we were totally shooting guerrilla style. Like we were not supposed to be there. And everyone was looking at me and pointing at me. And I felt so self-conscious. So it took a lot of bravery. And I say that because I feel like Amy and Nora really like, they're so brave about the way they do their art. And it gave me a lot of inspiration. So it was a lot of fun.
Have you tried? Open the door. Seek new world. In here, Security 90.3 FM from Montreal.
Are you a tenant in Montreal? Do you have questions about your rights? Your local housing committee can help. To find the housing committee for your neighborhood or for more resources, go to www.rclalq.qc.ca.
Data, our data. When you're not paying for a product, you are the product. Especially in web and email services, where multinationals compete to manage your communication so they can make a profit off of the private communication you are producing. Coombit is a worker cooperative trying to help small organizations or individuals get their email, website creation, and website hosting services off corporate services such as Google. For more information, contact us at coombit.org or email at info@coombit.org. That's K-O-U-M-B-I-T. We are not on Facebook.
I'm Martin Carly, and I like to popularize science. Vaccination against COVID-19 for children aged 5 to 11 has begun. As parents, you may be asking if your child will receive the same vaccine as adults. The vaccine used for children younger than 12 years old contains a smaller amount of mRNA because children's immune systems respond better than those of adults. And even though they're given smaller doses, the vaccine is just as effective.
For more information, visit quebec.ca/youthvaccine.
And I like to popularize science. Vaccination against COVID-19 for children aged 5 to 11 has begun. As parents, you may be asking if your child will receive the same vaccine as adults. The vaccine used for children younger than 12 years old contains a smaller amount of mRNA because children's immune systems respond better than those of adults.